The most important questions you can ask as a salesperson, entrepreneur, or business owner is whether what I'm doing right now is leading to a sale. Ask this question of yourself repeatedly throughout the day. Every time the answer comes up no, you must immediately stop whatever you are doing of lower value and turn your attention to sales generation. In addition, make sure that all the people who are responsible for sales in your company ask and answer this question in the affirmative all day long. Overcome your fear of rejection. Assuming that you have an attractive product or service, one that is reasonably priced and suited to the current market, the biggest problem that telephone salespeople and outside salespeople face is rejection. The fear of rejection does more to sabotage a sales career and undermine sales activities than any other single factor. It is the major obstacle to sales success. It takes tremendous discipline for salespeople to get up every morning and go out and face the inevitable rejection that they know they're going to receive all day long. Most people cannot handle this continuous rejection. Therefore, to avoid the emotional pain that comes with rejection, many salespeople engage in a series of displacement activities to avoid being rejected. First of all, they make fewer calls. According to Columbia University, the average salesperson works about 90 minutes per day. In other words, only about 1.5 hours out of an 8-hour day. They spend the rest of the time warming up and getting ready, shuffling paperwork, checking the internet, reading the newspaper, chatting with coworkers, coming in late, leaving early, and taking extended lunches and coffee breaks. As a result, by the end of the day, on average, the salesperson has worked only 90 minutes. Increase face time with customers and prospects. When is a salesperson actually working? The salesperson is only working when he or she is ear-to-ear on the phone or face-to-face with someone who can and will buy within a reasonable period of time. The rule for sales success can be contained in 6 words. Spend more time with better prospects. There's no other way to generate a high, consistent, and predictable level of sales results. Because of the fear of rejection, however, salespeople procrastinate and delay throughout the sales day, doing everything possible to avoid getting face-to-face with people who can say no. The key to sales success, as I learned as a young salesman, is to realize that rejection is not personal. Prospective customers always say things like, "No, I'm not interested," or variations of, "I don't want it, I don't need it, I can't use it, I can't afford it, I'm not in the market right now," or "I'm happy with my existing supplier." The professional salesperson realizes that these are simply normal and natural responses to any commercial offer in a competitive marketplace. Again, they are not personal, so don't take them personally. Remain positive and optimistic. The key to sales success is to eliminate the fear of rejection, to become so confident and optimistic that you can call continually all day long and still remain positive and cheerful. As Winston Churchill said, "Success is the ability to go from failure to failure with no loss of enthusiasm." There's a direct relationship between the number of new customer contacts you make and your level of sales. If you want to increase the number of sales, simply discipline yourself to call on more prospects. When you increase your levels of sales activity, you also activate the law of probabilities to work on your behalf. You tap into the law of averages. You work the numbers to ensure success. How to double your sales income. Practice the minutes principle in your sales work. This principle says that if you are earning all the money that you are earning today, with only the number of minutes you are spending face-to-face with customers today, by increasing that number of minutes, you can also increase your sales. With outside salespeople, we encourage them to double the number of minutes they spend face-to-face with customers. We teach them to use every bit of intelligence and creativity they have to increase the amount of time they spend talking in person with prospects, rather than following the path of least resistance and allowing themselves to procrastinate in getting out into the marketplace. In almost every case, when a salesperson doubles the number of minutes that he or she spends face-to-face or ear-to-ear with customers, that salesperson's sales double as well. This is not an accident. It is based on law, the law of probabilities. Control your sales activities. You can seldom tell where your next sale is going to come from. Therefore, you have to cast a wide net and speak to as many prospective customers as possible. The actual sale itself is not under your direct control. It's controlled by a variety of factors about which you can do very little. But the activities that lead to sales are completely under your control. The rule is, do what you can with what you have right where you are. To achieve high levels of sales success, you must discipline yourself to plan your days and weeks in advance. You must discipline yourself to plan your sales activities, especially your prospecting activities, every single day. And then you have to discipline yourself to follow through on your plans and resolutions. Improve your ratios. There are certain ratios in selling that largely determine how many sales you make. These ratios vary depending on your level of experience and ability, the competition, the prices of your products or services, and the general market. Nonetheless, these ratios always exist. There is a direct ratio between the number of cold calls you make and the number of prospective customers that you will be able to talk to or visit. There's a direct ratio between the number of prospective customers that you see or talk to and the number of prospects that you can follow up on. There's a direct ratio between the number of people you follow up on with proposals and presentations and the number of sales that you close. You can also think of this as a sales funnel. Into the top of the funnel, i.e. the broad end, go your prospects. The second part of your funnel is your presentations. The third part of the funnel is where you follow up and close the sale. Keys to sales success. You have two responsibilities when it comes to achieving success in sales. First, keep your funnel full. Always have more prospects to call on than you have time during the day. Never let your funnel become empty. Never run out of prospects. Second, get better at each stage of selling. Study, read, listen to audio programs, and upgrade your skills in prospecting, presenting, and closing sales. The better you get, the fewer prospects you require in the top of the funnel to generate sales out of the bottom of the funnel. Start early. Discipline yourself to make your first call early in the morning by 7 or 8 a.m. When you start your day with a face-to-face sales call, you'll be more energized and motivated to continue selling all day long. Discipline yourself to cluster your calls in a small geographical area so that you can get face-to-face with more people in a shorter period of time. Many salespeople, because of their fear of rejection, spread their calls out over a large geographical area and then convince themselves that they're actually working when they're really simply driving from call to call. Remember, you are only working when you are ear-to-ear or face-to-face with someone who can and will buy within a reasonable period of time. At all other times, you are unemployed. Set higher standards for yourself. Discipline yourself to act every minute of the day as if everyone were watching you. Outside salespeople require a higher level of discipline than people who work in the office where everyone can see them. Because salespeople are on their own, like guerrilla fighters in the sales jungle, the temptation is never-ending to slack off, to take it easy, or to go for coffee or lunch, rather than to make sales calls. To perform at your best, you must discipline yourself to work throughout the day, as though your sales manager was doing a ride-along. Imagine that your sales manager is sitting next to you all day long. How would you work differently if someone were accompanying you and observing everything you did throughout the day? Whatever your answer, that is how you should work, even when no one else is around. All sales skills are learnable. To become one of the highest paid salespeople in your industry, you must discipline yourself to practice continuous personal and professional development. Read in your field every day. Listen to educational audio programs in your car as you drive along. Attend every sales seminar you can, whether sponsored by your company or not. Dedicate yourself to continuous learning as if your future depends on it, because it does. The turning point in my life when I was a young salesman, frustrated and unhappy, going in circles and barely making a living, was when I learned the law of cause and effect. I learned that if you do what the most successful salespeople do over and over, There's nothing that can stop you from eventually achieving the same results and rewards that they do. I learned that every salesperson in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%. Everyone who is doing well today was at one time doing poorly. Every person at the top of your field was at one time not even in your field at all and did not even know that it existed. I learned that all sales skills are learnable. You can learn any sales skill you need to learn to achieve any sales goal you can set for yourself. There are no limits except the limits you place on yourself with your own thinking. When you discipline yourself to become one of the top salespeople in your field, you will find that you will have turned an important corner in your career. Most salespeople only do what they have to do to keep their jobs. But those people who resolve to become the very best in their fields accomplish far more than anyone else. Your job is to become one of them. In the next chapter, we'll talk about money and how the practice of self-discipline in this area can dramatically increase your likelihood of achieving all your financial goals. Now, here are some exercises for you. Number one, see yourself as the president of your own personal sales corporation, completely responsible for sales results. This is the attitude of the highest paid salespeople in every field. Two, set clear, written income goals for yourself for the next 12 months, as well as goals for each month of the year. Three, determine exactly how much of your product or service you will have to sell in order to earn that desired income. Four, determine how many individual sales you will have to make based on your average size of sale and amount of commission earned. Five, determine how many prospects you'll have to call on based on your current experience to make this number of sales. Six, dedicate yourself to continuous improvement in sales by reading each day, listening to audios in your car, and attending sales seminars. And number seven, spend every minute of every sales day getting face-to-face with people who can and will buy from you in the near future. Chapter 12, Self-Discipline and Money. In reading the lives of great men, Harry Truman said, I found that the first victory they won was over themselves. Self-discipline, with all of them, came first. According to insurance industry statistics, of 100 people who start work at age 21, by age 65, 1 will be rich, 4 will be financially independent, 15 will have some money put aside, and the other 80 will be still working, broke, dependent on pensions, or dead. Most baby boomers today are planning to work into their 70s. Why is this? It is because they don't have enough money put aside so they can stop working. The primary reason for financial problems in life is lack of self-discipline, self-mastery, and self-control. It is the inability to delay gratification in the short term. It is the tendency for people to spend everything they earn and a little more besides, usually supplemented by loans and credit card debt. Today, the savings rate in America is too low to achieve financial independence. After a lifetime of work, the average American family has a net worth of only about $8,000. People continue to spend and borrow as if there is no tomorrow. The good news is that we are living in the most affluent time in all of human history. There are more opportunities to achieve wealth and prosperity today for more people and in more different ways than have ever existed in the history of man. It has never been more possible for you to achieve financial independence than right now. But you must make a resolution to do it, and then you must follow through on your resolution. The reasons for financial failure. The primary reason why most adults have financial problems is not because of low earnings. In their book, The Millionaire Next Door, Thomas Stanley and William Danko show that two families living on the same street, in the same size of house, and working at the same job can have completely different financial situations. By the age of 45 or 50, the couple in one house will be financially independent, while the couple next door is deeply in debt and having trouble making the minimum payments on their credit cards. The reason for this is not the amount of money that they earn. The reason is lack of self-discipline and the inability to delay gratification. Why is this weakness of character so prevalent among the majority of adults in society today? It goes back to early childhood. When you were a child and you received money, whether it was your allowance or a gift from a friend or relative, the first thing you thought of doing was to spend that money on candy. Candy is sweet. Candy is delicious. Candy fills your mouth with a wonderful sugary flavor. You liked candy when you were a child, and you probably could seldom get enough of it. Many children will eat candy until they become physically ill because it tastes so good. As you grew older, you developed what psychologists call a conditioned response to receiving money from any source. Like Pavlov's dog, when you receive money, you mentally salivate at the thought of spending this money on something that makes you happy, at least temporarily. Spending makes you happy. When you become an adult and you earn or receive money, this automatic reaction continues. Your first thought is, how can I spend this money to achieve immediate pleasure? When you get your first job, the very first thing you think about is how you can spend not only the money you earn, but also every penny you can borrow on a credit card, on clothes, cars, cosmetics, socializing, entertainment, travel, and everything else. Your mental equation is money equals enjoyment. When you go on vacation to a resort of any kind, you find that the hotels and streets are lined with shops selling useless trinkets, baubles, and trash, plus clothes, artwork, and other items you'd never think of buying at home. Why is this? Simple. When you're on vacation, you feel happy. You have a conditioned response to associate happiness with spending money. The happier you are, the more unconsciously compelled you are to go out and spend money on something, or rather, on anything. It's quite common for many people, when they're unhappy or frustrated for any reason, to go shopping. They unconsciously associate buying something with being happy. When it doesn't work as they expected, they buy something else. Sometimes unhappy people go on shopping sprees. They buy lots of things that they don't particularly need because they unconsciously associate spending with happiness. As an adult, whenever you receive your paycheck, a bonus, a commission, an IRS refund, a prize, or an inheritance, the very first thing you think about is how you can spend this money as quickly as possible and on as many pleasures as possible. Rewire your responses about money. The starting point of achieving financial independence is to discipline yourself to rewire your attitude toward money. You need to reach into your subconscious mind and disconnect the wire linking spending and happiness. You then need to reconnect that happiness wire to the saving and investing wire. From that moment on, instead of saying, I feel happy when I spend money, you will say, I feel happy when I save money. To reinforce this shift in thinking, open up a financial freedom account at your local bank. This is the account in which you deposit money for the long term. Once your money goes into this account, you resolve that you will never spend it on anything except the achievement of financial freedom. If you want to save money to buy a boat or a car, you open up a separate account solely for that purpose. But your financial freedom account is inviolable. You never touch it except to invest those funds so that they can yield a higher rate of return. Associate happiness with saving. When you begin saving in this way, something miraculous happens within you. You start to feel happy about the idea of having money in the bank. Even if you only open your account with $10, this action gives you a feeling of greater self-control and personal power. You feel happier about yourself. The very act of disciplining yourself to save money makes you feel stronger and more in control of your destiny. Each time you get some extra money, you put it into your financial freedom account. Eventually, your financial freedom account will begin to grow. Then, as it grows, you activate two laws, the law of attraction and the law of accumulation. Because the money in your account is emotionalized by your own thoughts and feelings, it sets up a force field of energy that begins to attract more money into it. If you save $10 a month for a year, you'll be astonished to find that with the extra bits of money that you have put into that account, you'll probably have more than $200. rather than just $120. If you save $100 per month, you'll probably have more than $2,000. The law of accumulation says that every great achievement is an accumulation of many small achievements. The law of attraction says that you attract into your life those things that are in harmony with your dominant thoughts. Because of these laws, your financial freedom account begins to grow with the miracle of compound interest. The more money you have in your bank account, the more energy it generates, and the more money is attracted into your life. You've heard it said that it takes money to make money. This is true. As you begin to save and accumulate money, the universe begins to direct more and more money toward you that you can save and accumulate. Everyone who has ever practiced this principle of regular saving is absolutely astonished at how quickly their financial fortunes change for the better. The rule for financial independence, once you have rewired your attitude toward money, is simple. It is to pay yourself first. Most people save whatever is left over after their monthly expenses, if there is anything left over at all. The key, however, is to pay yourself first, off the top, from every amount of money you receive. Save throughout your lifetime. It used to be that if you saved 10% of your income from your first paycheck until you retired, you'd be financially independent, if not rich. Today, however, financial advisors suggest that you need to save 15 to 20% of your income in order to achieve all your financial goals. Any less than this opens you up to the risk of running out of money later in life. When we suggest to people that they need to begin saving 10% of their incomes, they shake their heads. Most people are spending everything they earn today. They have nothing left over. Most people are deeply in debt as well. The idea of saving 10% of their income right off the top appears impossible. But there is a solution. Practice the 1% formula. Begin today to save 1% of your income and learn to live on the other 99%. This is a manageable amount. This is a number that you can get your mind around. It requires only a small amount of self-discipline and delayed gratification for you to save 1% each month. If you are earning $3,000 per month, 1% is $30 per month, or only $1 per day. At the end of each day, come home and put your daily amount into a box or jar. Once per month, take your accumulated savings down to the bank and put it into your financial freedom account. This sounds like a small beginning, but remember that a journey of 1,000 leagues begins with a single step. In no time at all, you will become comfortable living on 99% of your income. At that point, you raise your savings level to 2% of your income per month. You then adjust your lifestyle to live on 98%. In no time, this will become a habit. You will find it automatic and easy to live on 98% of what you earn. Month by month, you then increase your savings level by 1%. At the end of the year, you will be saving probably 10% of your income. Then, something else remarkable will start to happen. Your debts will start to decline. As you become consciously aware of saving your money and moving toward financial independence, you will become more intelligent and thoughtful about each expenditure. You will find yourself spending less and gradually paying off your debts month by month. The payoff is tremendous. The reward for saving and investing is substantial. It is said that happiness is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. So every time you save a dollar or pay off a dollar of indebtedness, you feel happy inside. You feel more positive and in control of your life. Your brain releases endorphins, which in turn give you a feeling of calmness and well-being. Within 2 years of beginning this process, you will have worked your way out of debt and will have begun to accumulate a growing amount of money in your financial freedom account. As this amount increases, you will begin to attract into your life more money and more opportunities to deploy those funds intelligently so that they yield a higher rate of return. At the same time, your attitude toward money and spending will gradually change. You'll become more disciplined and conscientious. You will investigate carefully before you invest. You will study every aspect of a potential business or opportunity. You'll be reluctant to part with money that you've worked so hard to accumulate. you will actually begin to reshape your attitude and personality toward money, and do so in a very positive way. Income increases don't help. Sometimes I ask my audiences, who here would like to be financially independent? Everybody raises their hand. So I then say, if I could wave a magic wand and double the income of every person in this room, would that help you to become financially independent? Everybody cheers and laughs and nods their head, agreeing that if they could miraculously double their incomes, they could become financially independent. I then ask them, how many people in this room, from the time you took your first job to today, have already doubled your income? Without hesitation, every hand in the room goes up. I then ask, how many people here, from the time you took your first job to today, have increased your income 3 times, 5 times, 10 times? Hands go up all over the room. Everyone in the room has doubled or tripled or increased their income 5 or 10 times from the time they took their first job. I then make my point. Everybody here has already increased their incomes dramatically, but it has done no good. Simply increasing your income does not ensure that you will achieve financial independence. This is because of Parkinson's Law, which says expenditures rise to meet income. No matter how much you earn, you end up spending it all and more besides. Practice the wedge principle. The way to achieve financial independence is for you to break Parkinson's Law. You do this by practicing the wedge principle for the rest of your life. Here is how you do it. As your income increases in the months and years ahead, drive a wedge between your increasing income and your increasing expenses. Instead of spending it all, resolve that you will save 50% of your increase. If your income increases by $100 per month, resolve to save $50 per month off the top and put it into your financial freedom account. You can spend the other $50 on your family and on improving your lifestyle, but you must resolve to save half of your increase for the rest of your financial life. When you pay yourself first, saving 10 or 15% of your income off the top, and then saving 50% of your increase for the rest of your career, you will soon achieve financial independence. You will join the top 5% of wealthy people in our society. You will never have to worry about money again. The miracle of compound interest. Albert Einstein said that compound interest is the most powerful force in the universe. If, from the age of 21 until you are 65, you were to save only $100 per month and invest that amount in a mutual fund or index fund that increased an average of 7 to 10% per year, you would be worth more than $1 million. If you were to set up your payroll account so that $100 were automatically deducted and invested for you, you could be sure of becoming one of the wealthiest people in America. This means that if you are serious about achieving financial independence, the most important single requirement is self-discipline, combined with the ability to delay gratification. Your ability to practice self-mastery, self-control, and self-denial throughout your life will not only enable you to achieve all your financial goals, but it will also make you successful and happy in everything else you do. In the next chapter, we'll talk about the key to making almost everything in your life work for you, the use of your time. We all start off in life with lots of time and little money. How you spend your time throughout your adult years largely determines the quality of your life. Now, here are 7 action exercises for you. First, make a decision today to take complete control of your financial life, get out of debt, and achieve financial independence. Second, determine your net worth today. Add up all your assets, subtract all your debts and liabilities, and calculate the exact number. 3. Set up a separate bank account and begin saving at least 1% of your income as you receive it every month or paycheck. 4. Make a list of all your debts and begin paying them off, starting with those carrying the highest interest rates. 5. Calculate the exact amount that you will need to be financially independent at the end of your career, and then set this as a goal. 6. Set specific financial accumulation goals for yourself for each month, quarter, and year for the rest of your life. And 7. Practice frugality in spending by putting off and delaying every expenditure you possibly can until you achieve your long-term financial goals. Chapter 13, Self-Discipline and Time Management. If you do not conquer self, you will be conquered by self, wrote Napoleon Hill. There is perhaps no area of your life in which self-discipline is more important than in the way you manage your time. Time management is a core discipline that largely determines the quality of your life. As Peter Drucker said, you cannot manage time. You can only manage yourself. Time management is really life management, personal management, management of yourself rather than of time or circumstances. Time is perishable. It cannot be saved. Time is irreplaceable. Nothing else will do. Time is irretrievable. Once it is gone or wasted, you can never get it back. Finally, time is indispensable, especially for accomplishments of any kind. All achievement, all results, all success requires time. You can't save time. The fact is that you cannot save time. You can only spend it differently. You can only reallocate your time usage from areas of low value to areas of high value. Herein lies the key to success and the requirement for self-discipline. Time management is the ability to choose the sequence of events. By exerting your self-discipline with regard to time, you can choose what to do first, what to do second, and what to do not at all. And you are always free to choose. You require tremendous self-discipline to overcome the procrastination and delay that holds most people back from great success. A native Indian once told me that procrastination is the thief of dreams. The Pareto Principle, the 80-20 rule, says that 20% of the things you do account for 80% of the value of what you accomplish. This means that 80% of what you do is worth 20% or less of the value of what you accomplish. Assess the true value of everything you do. Some things you do are 5 times and even 10 times more valuable than other things, even though they take the same number of minutes and hours. The most important things you do, the top 20%, are usually big, difficult, and daunting. In contrast, the 80% of things that you do that make little or no difference to your life are usually fun, easy, and enjoyable. You can tell the value that something has to you by the amount of your time you invest in it. You always pay attention to and spend time on what you most value, whether it is your family, your health, your social or sports activities, or your money and career. It is only by looking at how you spend your time that you and everyone else knows what is really important to you. Some people say that career success is most important to them, and then they go home and watch television several hours per day. Some people say their families are important to them, and then they go out socializing or playing golf. Only your actions tell you and others what you truly value. The essence of time management is for you to discipline yourself to set clear priorities and then stick to those priorities. You must consciously and deliberately select the most valuable and important thing that you could be doing at any given time and then discipline yourself to work solely on that task. Personal strategic planning. In corporate strategic planning, the main focus is on increasing the return on equity, ROE. Equity in a business is defined as the amount of money actually invested in the business by the owners, aside from debt and money borrowed. The purpose of strategic planning is to find ways to organize and reorganize the business in such a way that the company is achieving a higher rate of return on this equity than it would be in the absence of the planning process. Companies invest financial capital, but individuals invest human capital. Companies deploy financial assets, but your most vital assets are your mental, emotional, and physical energies. How you invest them determines your entire quality of life. In personal strategic planning, your goal is to get the highest return on energy from your activities. Ken Blanchard refers to this as getting the highest return on life. Just as you would be careful about investing your money so as to ensure that you get the highest rate of return, you must be equally careful when you invest your time. You must be sure that you earn the highest level of results, rewards, and satisfaction from the limited amount of time you have. Think before you act. Before you commit to any time-consuming activity, you must always ask, is this the very best use of my time? Lack of self-discipline in time management leads people to procrastination on their top tasks continually, causing them to spend more and more time on tasks of low or no value. And whatever you do repeatedly eventually becomes a habit. Many people have developed the habit of procrastination, of putting off their major tasks and instead spending most of their time on activities that make very little difference in the long run. Priorities versus posteriorities. Setting priorities requires setting posteriorities as well. A priority is something that you do more of and sooner, whereas a posteriority is something that you do less of or later. You are probably already overwhelmed with too much to do and too little time. Because of this, for you to embark on a new task, you must discontinue an old task. Getting into something new requires getting out of another activity. Before you commit to a new undertaking, ask yourself, what am I going to stop doing so that I have enough time to work on this new task? Go through your life regularly and practice creative abandonment. Consciously determine the activities that you are going to discontinue so that you have more time to spend on those tasks that can really make a difference to your future. Identify the consequences. One of the most important words in developing the discipline of time management is consequences. Something is important to the degree that it has serious potential consequences for completion or non-completion. A task or activity is unimportant to the degree that it does not matter if it is done or not. For example, completing a course of study at the university can have enormous consequences that can impact your life for the next 50 years. Completing a major task or project at work or making an important sale can have significant consequences for your job and your income. On the other hand, drinking coffee, chatting with coworkers, reading the newspaper, surfing the internet, or checking emails may be enjoyable, but these activities have few or no consequences. In other words, whether you do them or not makes little or no difference to your work or to your life. However, it is precisely on these activities that most people spend most of their time. Managing your time. There is a simple time management system that you can use to overcome procrastination. It requires self-discipline, willpower, and personal organization, but the payoff is huge. When you use this system, you can double or even triple your productivity, performance, output, and income. Before you begin each day, start by making a list of everything you have to do that day. The best time to make this list is the evening before, at the end of the workday, so that your subconscious mind can work on your list of activities while you sleep. You will often wake up with ideas and insights for how to more effectively complete the tasks of the day. Then, apply the ABCDE method to your list. A is something that you must do. There are serious consequences for non-completion. A B is something that you should do. There are mild consequences for doing it or not doing it. A C is something that would be nice to do, but there are no consequences whether you do it or not. A D is something that you delegate, and you delegate everything you possibly can to free up more time for those things that only you can do. An E is something you eliminate. You discontinue all tasks and activities that are no longer essential to your work and to achieving your goals. Review your list of activities for the coming day and then write an A, B, C, D, or E next to each task before you start. If you have several A tasks, rank them by importance by writing A1, A2, A3, and so on. Do this with your B and C tasks as well. The rule is that you should never do a B task when you have an A task left undone. You should never do a lower value task when you have a higher value task before you. Once you've organized your list using this system, discipline yourself to start on your A1 task first thing in the morning before you do anything else. Practice single handling. Once you've begun work on your most important task, you must discipline yourself to concentrate single-mindedly with 100% of your time and attention until that task is complete. It takes tremendous self-discipline to select your most important task and then to start on that task rather than doing anything else. But once you begin to work on it, you'll start to feel a flow of energy that motivates and propels you into the task. You'll feel more positive and confident. You'll feel happier and more determined. The very act of starting on an important task raises your self-esteem and motivates you to continue. Deep within each person is an intense desire to feel strong, effective, powerful, and in control of his or her life. You automatically trigger these feelings of self-confidence and self-esteem when you discipline yourself to start work on the task that is most important to you at the moment. 1,000% return on investment. This ABCDE method seldom takes more than about 10 minutes to organize your entire day. But you'll save 10 minutes in execution for every minute that you invest in this way of planning before you begin. This means that you will get a 1,000% return on energy from the act of planning thoroughly and setting clear priorities before you start on your first task. As you feel yourself moving forward, making progress on your most important task, your brain releases a steady flow of endorphins, nature's happy drug. These endorphins will make you feel more positive, more focused, more alert, aware, and in control. When you discipline yourself to push against your natural resistance to get started on your most important task, you get an endorphin rush. You experience this as a sense of elation, exhilaration, happiness, and high self-esteem. By completing a major task, you feel exactly like an athlete who has crossed the finish line first. You feel like a winner. Your payoff from excellent time management is never-ending. As soon as you begin to plan and organize your time, set priorities, and begin on your A1 task, you'll feel happy and more in control of yourself and your life. The better you plan and execute, the better you feel. Keep yourself focused. The law of forced efficiency says, there is never enough time to do everything, but there is always enough time to do the most important things. Here are some questions that you should ask yourself to help keep you focused and working on your top tasks, activities, and responsibilities. Number 1. Why am I on the payroll? Exactly what have I been hired to do? What results are expected of me? You must be clear about your answer to this question. Discuss it with others. Ask your boss. Number 2. What are my key result areas? Of all the things I do, what are the most important results that I am expected to achieve in my position? There are seldom more than 5 to 7 key result areas in any job. It's essential that you identify yours and then work in those areas all day long. 3. What are my highest value activities? Of all the things I do, which activities contribute the greatest value to my company and to myself? You have core competencies that enable you to make a valuable contribution. What are they? Number 4. What can I and only I do that, if done well, will make a real difference? There's only one answer to this question at any given time. This is something that you and only you can do. If you don't do it, no one else will do it instead. But if you do do it and you do it well, it can make a tremendous difference in your life and work. And finally, question number 5, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? This is the most important of all questions for setting priorities and overcoming procrastination. At every minute of every day, there is an answer to this question. Your ability to organize your life and to select your highest priority is a key measure of your intelligence and your effectiveness. Start today. Starting today, you should apply these key time management principles to every area of your life. Apply them to your work, your family, your health, your exercise routine, and to financial decisions and activities. No excuses. You require tremendous discipline to set priorities and then stick to those priorities. You require the continuous exertion of discipline and willpower to overcome the procrastination that holds most people back. However, the more you discipline yourself to use your time well, the happier you will feel and the better will be the quality of your life in every area. What stands between you and your goals are almost always problems and difficulties of some kind. Your ability to effectively solve the problems of daily life can have an enormous impact on your results and rewards. We'll talk about this in the next chapter. Now here are 7 action exercises for you. 1. Make a decision today to become absolutely excellent at time management. Work at it until it becomes a habit. 2. Before you begin each day, make a list of everything you have to do that day. As new tasks arise, write them down before you act on them. 3. Organize your work list by priority by using the ABCDE method over and over until it becomes a habit. 4. Identify your A1 task each day and resolve to work single-mindedly on that task until it is totally complete. 5. Identify the one task that only you can do, and that, if you do it well, can make a real difference. 6. Determine the 20% of your tasks that can account for 80% of your results, and then discipline yourself to work on them most of the time. And 7, every minute of every day, ask yourself, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? And then discipline yourself to work on only that task until it's complete. Chapter 14, Self-Discipline and Problem Solving. Experience is not what happens to a man, it is what a man does with what happens to him. Aldous Huxley. Thoughts are causes and conditions are effects. Therefore, the quality of your thinking largely determines the quality of your life. The greatest mental principle is that you become what you think about most of the time. Top people in every field are intensely solution-oriented. They think about solutions most of the time. Instead of getting bogged down in who did or didn't do something or other, the most successful people in every field concentrate on the solutions and what can be done to solve the problem. The Sufi philosopher Isfrit Khan once wrote, "Life is a continuous succession of problems. Like waves from the ocean, they never stop." This means that your ability to practice self-discipline, self-mastery, and self-control when faced with the never-ending flow of problems, difficulties, setbacks, and temporary failures you will experience is essential to your success in business and in life. The inevitable and unavoidable crisis. Throughout your life, you will face a river of problems: physical, financial, family, business, and political. The only break in this never-ending chain of problems will be the occasional crisis. If you're living a normal life, you'll probably experience a crisis every 2 or 3 months. And it is in these crises that you truly demonstrate the quality of your personality and the strength of your character. It's only when you face unexpected reversals and setbacks that you show the world what you are truly made of. All of life is a test. The only question for you is, do you pass or fail? By its very nature, crises come unbidden. You have no warning or ability to anticipate them in advance. If you did, it wouldn't be a crisis in the first place, obviously, or you would already be prepared. When the inevitable crisis occurs, more than at any other time, self-discipline is required so that you can remain calm and clear-headed in order to deal with the crisis effectively. Perform at your best. When something goes wrong, the natural tendency of most people is to become angry and look around for someone to blame. But this is a waste of energy. It solves nothing. Instead, you must discipline yourself to remain calm, objective, and unemotional. When you face an unexpected problem or crisis, discipline yourself to stay calm, to focus on the solution rather than the problem. Think in terms of what can be done now, rather than thinking about how it occurred or who is to blame. Like an accident where someone is hurt, you focus on caring for the injured person, stopping the bleeding, and minimizing the damage before you start analyzing what and how it happened. Practice self-discipline when dealing with a problem or crisis, by immediately saying, I am responsible, even if at that moment you are only responsible for controlling your responses. Keep your mind clear. Top people have developed the ability to respond effectively to a crisis, to remain calm, relaxed, and clear-eyed. They discipline themselves to stay cool and unemotional. This enables them to think more clearly, to analyze the situation objectively, and to make better decisions. But the moment you become angry and upset, your neocortex, your thinking brain, shuts down. All you have left then is your paleocortex, your emotional brain, which thinks in terms of fight or flight. When your emotional brain is in charge, you think in terms of black and white, yes or no, doing something or doing nothing. You lose the ability to think in shades of gray and to look at all the different possible ways to deal with this particular situation. Top people realize that every problem is an opportunity to grow in self-control and personal confidence. In fact, you will rise in life to the height of the problems that you are capable of solving. Stepping Stones to Success. Some years ago, Dr. Lawrence Peter wrote a book called The Peter Principle. It was an amusing book with a central thesis that cut too close to home. He wrote that in every organization, people continue to be promoted until they reach a level where they are no longer competent to solve the problems at that level. This is where they stop and stay for the rest of their careers. Furthermore, he pointed out that for this reason, every organization is eventually staffed by people who have reached their level of incompetence. This is especially true in government, and it is the primary reason why government is so time and cost inefficient, making it difficult to get anything done at all. This is usually true in any large bureaucracy. In your own personal life, you continue to rise in your company, your profession, in direct proportion to your ability to solve the problems and make the necessary decisions at each level of your career. The good news is that when you think about solutions most of the time, you train your brain to be intensely solution-oriented. No matter what problems or difficulties arise around you, your brain will be continually seeking creative ways to solve the problem. As a result, you actually become smarter and quicker, with more of your thinking brain available to you faster. If you want to learn a physical sport, you begin by learning the basic moves and then the more advanced moves. You practice these skills over and over again until you can perform them and go through the motions naturally and easily every time. To master the discipline of problem solving, you need to develop a formula or method that enables you to deal effectively with almost any problem you face in the course of your career or personal life. Fortunately, there's a proven formula for problem solving and decision making that you can use in almost any situation. Let's take a look. A 9-step method for solving problems effectively. Step 1. Take the time to define the problem clearly. In medicine, they say that accurate diagnosis is half the cure. Therefore, you need to ask, what exactly is the problem? It is absolutely amazing how several people can become upset about a problem in an organization, but every one of them has a different idea or definition of the exact nature of the problem they're facing. Your job is to achieve clarity and to get everyone to agree on the definition of the problem before you move on to the business of solving it. Step 2, ask, is it really a problem? Remember, there are some things that you can do nothing about. They're not problems, they are merely facts of life. If interest rates rise or the subprime mortgage market collapses, this is not a problem. This is not something that is amenable to a solution. Instead, it is something that must be worked around and dealt with. Also, very often what appears to be a problem or a setback is actually an opportunity in disguise. Sometimes the problem does not need to be solved at all. Instead, you are now free to do something completely different, which might be even better for you and your organization. Step 3, ask, what else is the problem? Beware of any problem for which there is only one definition. The more ways you can define a problem, the more likely it is that you will find the best solution. When we work with corporations in which sales are below a desired level, we force them to ask 21 questions, all of which are different ways of restating the problem. Each restatement of the problem if accepted as the correct definition, leads to a different solution and often to a completely different direction for the organization. For example, we will ask, what is the problem? And the first answer is, our sales are too low. The next question is, what else is the problem? Answer, our competitors' sales are too high. Notice the difference. If the problem is that your sales are too low, the solution may be to increase your advertising and promotion and beef up your sales activities. If the definition is that your competitors' sales are too high, the answer may be to improve your products, change your product line, lower your prices, or go into a completely different business altogether. By asking and answering a series of questions like this, we eventually find the correct definition, the one that is amenable to a workable solution. Step 4, ask, how did this problem occur? Seek to understand the causes of the problem so that you can ensure that it doesn't happen again. In your life or business, if a problem recurs repeatedly, it is a sign that your business is poorly organized or out of control in that area. There is a defect built into your systems that is causing the same problem to recur. Your job is to find out why this happens repeatedly so that you can solve the problem at its root. Step 5, ask, what are all the possible solutions? The more possible solutions you develop, the more likely you will come up with the right one. The quality of the solution seems to be in direct proportion to the quantity of solutions considered in problem solving. Beware a problem for which there is only one solution. Step 6, ask, what is the best solution at this time? Sometimes any solution is better than no solution. An average solution vigorously executed is often superior to an excellent solution that cannot be implemented because of its complexity or because no one has the ability to execute it. The rule is that fully 80% of all problems should be dealt with immediately. Only 20% of problems need to be put off to a later time. If you must put off a problem, set a specific deadline for making a decision on that problem, and then make your decision at that deadline with whatever information you have at that time. There is a rule that says that every large problem was once a small problem that could have been solved easily and inexpensively at that time. Sometimes the best strategy is to nip it in the bud. When it is clear that there is a problem and a solution, do what has to be done and do it quickly. Step number 7, make a decision. Select a solution, any solution, and then decide on a course of action. Always ask, what is our next action? What are we going to do now? Step 8, assign responsibility. Who exactly is going to carry out the solution or the different elements of the solution? It's quite common for a group to meet to solve a problem and to agree on a solution, but when the group meets again 2 weeks later, it turns out that nothing has happened. Why? Because no one was made specifically responsible for carrying out the decision. Step 9, set a measure for the decision. What are you trying to accomplish with this decision, and how will you measure results? How will you know that it worked? The more accurately you can determine the result that you want to achieve by the solution, the more likely it is that you will achieve it. The big reward. The main reward you get for solving problems is the opportunity to solve bigger and more important problems. Your rate of pay and speed of promotion, and therefore your forward movement in your career, is largely determined by your problem-solving ability. The more you focus on solutions, the more solutions you will come up with, and the more valuable your contribution will be to your organization.